Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
oh, yeah.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia.
And too many things that are with us are burning all around us. That's Dar Williams singing with Pete Seeger and David Burns, our wonderful Solartopia theme song here at the Green Power and Wellness Show, and Solartopia and all that stuff. We are joined today by two spectacular and extremely important experts on election protection and election theft, and they have been going to the hearings that nobody's paying attention to because of all the crazy stuff in Iraq and Iran, but which will determine the future of our elections and our earth. John Brakey, are you with us?
I certainly am, Harvey. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. And you're in Arizona, right?
That's correct. Even though with the internet, you could be anywhere, you know, like those hearings today in Washington.
Yes. Well, we're going to talk about that. And Susan Pinchon, you're also with us. You're in Florida. Is that right?
That's right. I'm here, Harvey.
Well, you are, of course, by all accounts, if you stay in Florida much longer, you will soon be underwater. Anybody who's looked at a map from the sky of Florida knows that there's, you know, you're basically at sea level, and sea level is rising. So either get some pontoons or be prepared to move. What I want to do with today's show, you two have incredibly important information on the whole situation with our elections. You've listened in on recent hearings. You're experts on ballot machines, on voter registration, and the computerized ballot marketing nonsense that they want to put through. But I know everyone is keyed in at the moment to what's happening in Iraq and Iran, and the Trump push for a war, or wagging the dog here, a major distraction. So I want to talk about it a bit, just to keep us current. It's just hours ago that this plane went down, over there, and it's just insane what's going on here. So I'm going to talk about a bit about this. I'm going to give you guys, John and Susan, an opportunity to vent, and then we'll devote the rest of our hour here to the incredibly important and detailed information that you two have on some of the important developments in the upcoming election, because it is really fast and furious. Our world has accelerated to a point where it's dizzying, and so let's do that. I mean, I'd be remiss if we didn't talk in the beginning a bit about Iraq and Iran, and then we will go from there into what you two have discovered in the world of election protection. So the first thing, I mean, this is just hours ago, this Ukrainian jetliner went down over Iran. By all accounts, among the people on this airplane, this is a civilian airliner with 176 passengers and crew. There were 63 Canadians, and most of them were college kids who were with their professors and had been on a trip, for God's sakes. I mean, this is a horrible, horrible tragedy. And the question, it was a Boeing airliner, by the way. And Boeing, of course, is now known for its flying death traps. And the accounts indicate that the plane had taken off and then at 8,000 feet was turning around to come back. And then it blew up, which is pretty rare, actually. That you know, airplanes go down, but they don't blow up in midair. And what generally, and what the Americans now have immediately jumped in and started saying is that it was mistakenly shot down by the Iranians, who vehemently denied it. And, you know, I'm not even going to begin to speculate on where the, how the Americans, you know, would know or speculate that the Iranians had shot down this airliner by mistake. You know, it, to me, it's just you know, agitprop, and who really knows at this point in time. But this is a horrible tragedy, and it's a, it was a Boeing 737-800, and we will probably never know what brought it down. But and the to me, the idea that the Americans, the Trump administration would jump in and immediately said, blame it on the Iranians, is just, shall we say, suspect. And I think what we've seen over the past while, I'm going to tell you right now on air, and I know, John and Susan, you're not going to be able to comment on this directly because it is partisan, and you guys are doing the great work under a 501c3, so that's fine. And you can be frame what you say however you want, but there's no doubt in my mind that Donald Trump murdered this guy, Soleimani, for political purposes of his own. He's on the brink of an impeachment hearing, impeachment trial. I mean, it's actually not an impeachment hearing. It's not an impeachment trial. It's a removal hearing and a removal trial. The impeachment is done. You know, the impeachment is the indictment. Donald Trump has been indicted. As far as I'm concerned, the House of Representatives should reopen impeachment hearings on new items to charge him with, primarily the murder of Soleimani, the number two guy in Iran. It's as if the Iranians had swooped in and killed Mike Pence. I mean, Mike Pence is the number two guy in the American government, and Soleimani was the number two guy in the Iranian government. And to me, it's classic wag the dog. I'm not saying anything that anybody else is saying of Trump to divert attention from his own domestic crisis here. And it's very important, as far as I'm concerned, to note for a wide range of reasons that Trump made the decision to kill this guy at Mar-a-Lago. And he was at a party, basically a gathering of his fellow autocrats, his fellow billionaire mobsters, and joyously announced to the group that he had done this. I mean, you know, this is classic Donald Trump, look at me, how cool I am. Maybe he did it to get so Melania would hold his hand in public. We don't know. But there was absolutely a terrible provocation, made no sense whatsoever in any kind of military strategic terms. The only way the murder of this guy, Soleimani, made sense was for as a diversion for Donald Trump to take attention away from, among other things, the fact that John Bolton has now agreed to testify. It's how wonderful an American government official has agreed to actually comply with a congressional subpoena. I mean, come on, you know. So, and this is really, really dangerous. I mean, I was a young person in high school in 1962 during the Cuban Missile Crisis. And we were all fully aware of the fact that the Earth could, the ability of human beings to live on the Earth could dissolve in a nuclear holocaust. But I actually, maybe I was younger and more naive, but I actually never really thought it would happen because I had faith that the Kennedys were smart enough and sane enough to make sure this didn't happen. And by God, that's how it worked out. But we have no such reason for assurance. I mean, we know that we have in the White House, and I never call him president, but we have in the White House a psychopathic madman, and as was Richard Nixon, by the way, who did want to use nuclear weapons in Vietnam and was prevented from doing so by the anti-war movement. I only hope that we can arouse the kind of popular fear and sanity to prevent this guy from causing a nuclear holocaust. I mean, people have to understand Iran is not a small country. It's three times the size of France. They have 80 million people. They're technologically extremely advanced, and they're not going to, like, roll over, as Vietnam did not roll over for American. Iran is not a poor country either. The people there are very well educated, even by American standards. I think they're going one way and we're going the other. And the idea of a war with Iran, which people have been tiptoeing around for a long, long time. There's a reason we haven't gone to Iran before, to war with Iran before. They are big. Iran will not be defeated in any war that the United States is capable of mounting. Their military is huge. It is well equipped. They have plenty of allies all over the world. They're not some small, isolated country like Vietnam was, and where we lost anyway. Trump has succeeded, and we will see where this goes, of convincing the Iraqi government to ask us to leave, which has been a long time coming. He's claiming now he won't comply with that request. And he's order. It's really an order by the Iraqi government that American troops leave. Now he's making an issue of how much money we spent on an airbase there. I guarantee you the Iranians and the Iraqis have more than enough money to pay for that airbase if that's what the Donald wants. Trump may finally have succeeded, hopefully, in getting us out of Iraq. That would be wonderful. But if it's in the face of a nuclear holocaust here, God help us all. I want to add one more thing. Trump is now in the process of repealing environmental regulations on major construction projects, including, of course, the big pipelines. And he wants these big pipelines and other big environmentally catastrophic projects to not even be subject to environmental review. This is the kind of thing that puts money in his pocket and destroys our Earth and leads to Armageddon holocausts, like we're seeing in Australia now. I mean, the fires in Australia are basically the end of the Earth as we know it. It does not get worse unless it was a nuclear weapon or a nuclear power plant. Shy of that, this is the worst thing that could happen. We've seen it here in California, in Northern California, where Pacific Gas and Electric contributed to burning down one of the most beautiful and supportive ecosystems in the world, completely wiped out a town, killed over 80 people, and filled the San Francisco Bay Area with toxic smoke for more than 10 days. And yet these people are still running nuclear power plants. The nuclear power plants are also being relieved of any kind of environmental or technical review. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission has essentially stopped. It's under Trump's control, and it's stopped doing normal technical inspections, engineering inspections. So we are in really, really deep trouble here. It's not just Trump, but Trump is the symptom. He's the mental breakdown at the end of the Imperial Tunnel. He's a completely predictable psychosis coming out of a country that's been conquering other countries for more than 200 years. So all of this is in front of us, I'm sure, listeners, that you've had similar thoughts. John Brakely, you want to chime in on this within the limitations of your possibilities here before we get to talking about elections?
I guess I could by saying this, is that's why elections matter. That's why what I do, what Susan Pinchon does, and who are very committed to the movement of making elections transparent, trackable, and publicly verified is so important. You know, when you were talking about 1962 and the Cuban Missile Crisis, I remember where I was. You know, it was scary. My mother taking us down, and my brother and sister, this old farmhouse in Maine that was 250 years old, and saying, we're going to stay down here for a week because what's going to happen? I mean, it was a trauma for me. And then going to school and learning how to put your head below a desk and put it between your legs. The only thing that they forgot to tell us is that if a nuclear attack is that we're supposed to bend over far enough to kiss our ass goodbye. They didn't do that part. And that's my motivation to do the work that I do, and I know Susan does, is because we decide that it's more important to work for hope than hopelessness, because hopelessness is a terrible place to live. And a lot of people live in denial and hopelessness in this country. That's what drug addiction's about. And the failure of our society to have to treat these problems properly. And it can only be treated realistically how? With education, stabilizing people, not prisons. So, wow, elections really do matter.
Susan? All right, and we got one coming up in 2020, and I'm going to ask you after Susan talks to go a little more. Well, actually, do it now, John. Explain to us exactly what you do, and then we'll have Susan explain to us what she does, and then we'll go into the crux of the matter here, these hearings, Cambridge Analytica, computerized voting, because 2020, I think everybody understands that if 2020 goes the wrong way, and you can't comment on this, but I can, the world will not survive. The world will survive. The earth will survive. But the human race will not survive 4 more years of Donald Trump. You know, it's pretty clear that American democracy won't get through 4 more years of Donald Trump. I mean, that's very, very clear. If Trump is given a second term, you're going to see death squads. You're going to see complete suppression of the vote, of freedom of speech, of the media. All that stuff is going to happen. Everything that Hitler did in Germany will happen in the United States if Donald Trump gets through the 2020 election. What's not clear is, and this is where you two are the great experts, is how we're going to protect the 2020 election and what forces we're really going to face. Susan Pinchon, do you want to vent at all about Iran and Iraq before we get more deeply into this part?
No, Harvey, I think you said a lot.
Okay.
I'm hiding under my desk after everything you said. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. But
that was a good time. Susan Pinchon.
And I want to explain why, because, our job, what the work that me and Susan do is we're like referees. We're out there. Our work, we have to maintain an image. And truthfully, is that our work is not about the right or left. It's about right, wrong, greed, and corruption and exposing it. And we come from the old school that we know nothing is fixed till we know why it broke. And to really do that, you really build relationships nonpartisanly, and you have to keep yourself in a state of mind. You know, there's sometimes I see things I would like to post. I can't because it sends a message to people that I'm trying to reach across. I ask the same thing from them, that I'm not here to talk about politics. I'm here to talk about what the track condition that politics is based on, okay? Because that's what it really is. And, you know, and what we do is to make sure that track condition is that they're not giving the horses drugs or propaganda or weighing races. I mean, there's so much going on in the industry of elections is, you know, I could sometimes say, wow, there's a lot of election chicanery, and election fraud is a small part of it. And that's where, you know, understanding what happened back in 2004, when they passed the Help America Vote Act, and that's part of the thing we're getting in the show, is how they're using really outfits like that to do mind control. Susan, why don't you jump in there?
Yeah, Susan Pinchon, you're in Florida. Explain to us, please, your organization, your background, and where you're coming from on this, so our listeners will have a better idea of who you are as you proceed.
Well, thank you, Harvey. I founded Florida Fair Elections Coalition in 2004, right after the 2004 election. And we've been doing work ever since. We've done numerous reports. Our website, if anybody's interested, is ffec.org, and FFEC stands for Florida Fair Elections Coalition. So if you can look and see our many reports that we've done. We're very careful to be accurate. As John said, we're nonpartisan. We're not. This is not about politics. This is about looking at elections and figuring out how they can be made more secure, more transparent, more verifiable. And there's a lot of work to be done. And John's done a huge amount of work with his different couple organizations that he started, Audit Arizona and now Audit USA. And it's important work because we're looking at things that most people are not looking at, the details of elections, the procedures, as John said, the chicanery that can occur. So we take this very seriously and think we're making a big contribution.
All right, so let's make it clear. There's really the upcoming election, which everybody agrees is going to decide the fate of the earth, pretty much. I mean, I'm sure there's some people don't feel that way, but I certainly do. Everybody, every activist, every citizen I know believes that the 2020 election will decide whether there's going to be democracy in America and whether the human race will have an ecological support system in which to survive. So on the one level, the usual standard 200-year American democracy, 220 American democracy level, there will be campaigns, money will play a role, personalities, issues, debates, all
social
that.
Media.
The media.
Social media.
Everything that
social
we have.
Media, yeah.
Yes. Everything that we have in our traditional electoral process will be out there. But the substructure of the election, how people are on the voter rolls. And I had dinner last night with Greg Palast and talking about the massive disenfranchisement of people all over the country through stripping the voter rolls. That's going on. We have how many polls there will be, how many precincts where people will be allowed to vote. Can they vote online? Can they get paper ballots in the mail? How all that will happen. And then, of course, how people are influenced sub rosa on social media was a big part of the situation. Cambridge Analytica, which you two will talk about, you've just seen this incredible hearing. How the votes are cast. Are they going to be cast on paper? Are they going to be cast on machines? Are those machines going to be flipped as they were in 2000, 2004, and 2016? And to a certain extent, of course, also in 2008 and 2012. In the new millennium here, we have electronic voting machines and electronic tallying, which is still easily hacked and has been clearly, and all the other stuff that goes in on the nitty gritty, the kitchen sink issues of the counting, casting and counting of the ballots. And that part of it is what you two specialize in, and without your work on this, we'd be nowhere. John Brakey, can you identify yourself, please, and tell us exactly what you're working on?
Well, John Brakey started off in Arizona in 2004 as Audit Arizona. Became very aggressive in Arizona, getting down to a bottom of a couple of really big heists. A big one was a RTA election that we were in for 9 years, among other cases, which really gave me the background, because Arizona is a very notorious state, as is Florida, is where Susan is. And so then from there, we started doing cases in other states. And the next thing you know, you do something for 15 years and you got full-time doing it like me and Susan. All of a sudden, one day you wake up and you find out that you're an expert, that nobody really knows what we know. And then have the mindset that me and Susan have and how we investigate. When we go into a state, first go in to do a track condition report. And there were all the voting equipment. So we go in and we investigate, we educate, we advocate, sometimes mix a little agitation in there. We find out where these people are breaking the law by destroying public records. Because, you know, part of the solution that me and Susan worked for is that this new digital voting system we have in this country from 2004 to now, in 2004 there was 0% of the equipment in this country made a image of a ballot, okay? It used a system called Mark Sense technology, like we did in school. It was an LED light coming down on a piece of paper, and it decided that was a vote, but left no evidence behind. As we speak right now, 80% of the country that is using hand-marked paper ballots or a ballot marking device that will go, that ballot or receipt will go into a digital scanner and create an image. What we're trying to do is to take away the impunity of a hacker by making elections, what, transparent, good thing, trackable, that's chain of custody, and publicly verified. And that's what we do. And the big reason, my motivation on it is pretty simple, is that it's more important today that we prove to the loser that they really lost, or at least his disciples or whatever, than it is to the winner.
John Brady, I know that you've been crusading. John Brady, you've been crusading around the country. How many states have you been in talking about and
states.
Investigating? How many?
14 states physically.
Which states have you been in?
14, yeah.
Which ones?
And I'm meeting some great patriots all across this country. I'm very proud of the people that I'm working with nationally that are starting to see that there is hope. And that's the big thing that we're up pushing is hope.
And Harvey, could I just give a shout out to John real quickly?
Yeah, go ahead.
Because I'll give the most recent example, North Carolina. John did we did a track conditions report to get some idea of what was going on in the state, talked to some of the state administrators. John went there to North Carolina in person, basically not knowing anyone. He had a reference to meet a Dr. Reverend Anthony Spearman, who he didn't even know at the time was the head of the state's NAACP. He had the names of a couple other election activists, none of whom knew each other. They were working on their own. John met these people, explained some of the problems about North Carolina and nationally, brought them all together. They ended up forming a loose-knit but very strong coalition. And today, Dr. Spearman testified before the House Administration Committee on a special elections hearing. And much of what he said, and he in his written statement, he mentioned John a couple times because he learned from John what some of the real problems are. And so
Susan Pinchon, you've mentioned North Carolina. North Carolina is one of the critical states. It will be among the swing states that decides 2020 and who becomes president after that election. So we're talking about basically Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, North Carolina, maybe Georgia, maybe Florida, maybe even Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, Iowa, Nevada as key swing states. Now, you went into North Carolina. Yeah, John, you helped form an organization. What are the issues? What are the technical issues that you were looking at and continue to look at in North Carolina?
Oh, my goodness. It was quite a few.
Paper ballots.
Big
John,
thing is
right at the top of the list.
What do you want to say?
Hand-marked paper ballots is
so
right at the top
one.
Of the list.
Yeah,
number one all over the
when
country.
I go into the state, I knew that the state was 66% hand-marked paper ballots. And I knew from working with Susan all these years that the same machine that Florida threw out in 2007 was setting 26 counties or 34% of the vote. And we called them the it was the push and pray DRE, direct recording, Votronics by ESNS. And they were supposed to have been banned and gone out of the state by 2013, but somehow they still stick around. And when we discovered that, and then the other thing that we really discovered that made me really angry is that I believe that we're all entitled to a secret ballot. And in North Carolina, if you vote early or by absentee, they will attach your name to the ballot. That means they know how you vote. In a presidential election in North Carolina, 60% of the people who cast ballots secretly will have their name put on the ballot with a code.
and they say that they do this because they gave them same-day registration. And if you die before election day, we can pull your ballot out. I mean, really stupid things. You know, voting is a secret process. Public, you know, counting is the public part of that process. They got it reversed. It's Orwellian. And the other thing that we saw,
John,
that me and
John,
Susan really got into, hard to find out, is how corrupt the state was and how they're really using propaganda with their board of elections, misleading people. It's it was extremely, the vendors have too much power, mainly one.
Susan, you wanted to jump in on that?
Well, just when John was talking about, you know, the influence that that can happen by them knowing how people voted, that ties into this whole Cambridge Analytica thing, which was not the hearing today, Harvey. That's a whole separate thing. The hearing today, the vendors, the president of the CEOs of the three largest voting machine companies spoke today, and then some activists spoke, including Dr. Spearman. So it was very interesting. But this whole thing with social media and Cambridge Analytica, and if you haven't seen the documentary, The Great Hack, which has been nominated for an Oscar, it's on Netflix. Look it up. Sit down tonight and watch it, because it is amazing how they're manipulating people, all of us. We don't even know we're being manipulated, but they can target, they know what kind of coffee you like to drink in the morning, you know, and they can focus social media and ads and news stories to your likes and desires. So in North Carolina, when they know how each person voted, they can target that person. It's mini targeting, you know, I mean, just individual targeting to keep, you know, to help make them vote the way they want them to. And this whole Cambridge Analytica thing, there are a number, well, in The Great Hack, you'll see it, but they call it weaponizing information. It's actually defense level weapon to take this social media and this information and target people. And so what North Carolina is doing and some other states are doing also by tracking how people vote, and the people in North Carolina don't even know what's happening. If you try to explain it to them, they don't really get it, because people just aren't aware of how absolutely wrong it is for anyone to know exactly how you voted.
So you're telling us here in this day and age that if you vote absentee
or early,
the election board can get your ballot and find out how you voted, and then they turn over that data to a group like Cambridge Analytica, which will target you on social media?
No, they say they're not turning over the data. They say they only use it in cases of, you know, like a court case, or they did use it recently. They had absentee ballot fraud in North Carolina, and everybody defended the ability to pull up people's ballots because they said it helped solve the absentee ballot fraud case. But it is just not okay. It's one of the basis of voting is that you're entitled to a secret vote. So some of these things are being, they're being violated without people even being aware that it's happening.
We're talking with Susan Pinchon and John Brakey, two of the very top, most important election protection activists. Susan is in Florida. John is in Arizona, but John has traveled the country. Basically, the number one issue that we're looking at here is hand-counted, hand-marked paper ballots. For all the craziness that we know can come with electronic machinery and all that stuff, still that stuff persists. I mean, it's mind-boggling. It would seem to be so simple. John Brakey, you have become a major proponent of digital ballots, where or digital images, where you go in, and I went with Mimi Kennedy, the great Mimi Kennedy, to look at a machine in Los Angeles that does this. When you get there, you specify what language you want to cast your ballot in, and this is certainly important in such a diverse country as ours. In Los Angeles, there are 14 officially recognized languages in which to cast the ballot. So you come in, you show your registration, which, of course, is an issue all itself. The computer prints out the ballot in your language of choice. You mark the ballot with a pencil or a pen. The ballot is then inserted into a computerized reading machine. The machine makes a digital image, and then the actual paper ballot is preserved and goes into a bin that is transparent plastic, and you can look and see that your ballot went into the bin. The votes are then counted through the digital image, and then if there's a dispute or a very close election where a recount is required, the recount, if necessary, can be done on the original hand-marked paper ballots. Now, what is so complicated? Why can't the whole country use that system? John Brakey, tell us.
Well, I would say this, is that, you know, you just said it perfectly. You have a hard copy ballot, and then you have an image. Now, that hard copy is hard for everybody to get at if it was a hand-marked paper ballot, because somebody might have a piece of lead. They have all sorts of rules. These two things protect each other. The most important document is the hand-marked paper ballot. The second most important document is the image. The third most important document is the cast vote record, because it's chain of custody, okay? And these things protect each other going forward and back. And so that is what we're advocating. One, you have to keep protected. The other one is a public record. And then somehow we have a scientific formula. If anybody could add images, that you go back and use risk-limiting audits to prove that the images are real and they haven't been tampered with, and vice versa. Does that make sense, Harvey?
Yes, and then in the bottom line is, if all else fails, you just take the paper ballots out of the bins and count them. What a concept.
Right.
Now,
right.
John,
but it's hard for
going all
to
over
do that.
You're going all over the country. Why is this not universally adapted? What is the problem?
Because
Harvey, could I jump in for just a minute
right
on that? Because this is
go ahead.
I really think that the country's been ambushed by, particularly by election systems and software. The largest voting machine company in the country came up with a voting device called a ballot marking device, which has been used in the past as an assistive device for voters with disabilities. And so a lot of precincts will have one assistive device per precinct for people who need special assistance in voting. What ESNS did, and as one of the people in the hearing today, a computer scientist, said that they were stunned when counties across the country started buying these ballot marking devices, not just as assistive devices, but for all voters. And what ESNS did was, and I don't want to lose you here, but they invented a machine that has a different size. They call it a ballot, but you go in, you vote on a touch screen. This is a ballot marking device. It spits out what they call a ballot, but it's really like a summary card of your selections. And they're calling that a ballot, and then you take that so-called ballot and you put it in the digital scanning machine, instead of a hand-marked paper ballot. So you might say, well, what's wrong with that? Well, there's a lot that's wrong with that. First of all, those machines, people don't verify that printout. They've done studies. They just came out with one yesterday, a new one, by the renowned computer scientist Alex Halderman, showing that people do not check those printouts. So there's no way to know that the results are right. Plus, they count the votes on a barcode instead of the actual names. So none of us know how to read barcodes. So right there, that's a problem. Thirdly, these machines cause huge lines, because instead of just being able to have, 50 voting booths set up, little inexpensive $100 voting booths, they have to buy a $5,000 machine, and so they can only have a few per precinct. So people are lined up, especially at peak hours, but all day long, lined up waiting to use these machines. And long lines are a form of voter suppression. You can put those machines in a specific precinct, you know, put too few machines, just like you could with those direct recording, with the DREs, the direct recording electronic machines. So you suppress the vote by putting too few machines in a precinct. You suppress the vote by just having long lines. Every article about problems with these machines mentions somewhere in it that there were long lines. And then the last problem is that they're not verified. Oh, the last big problem, sorry, is expense. So in Dr. Spearman's, we just mentioned him earlier, the head of the North Carolina NAACP, he's on the election board in Guilford County, North Carolina. Because John and helped educate Dr. Spearman, and Dr. Spearman helped educate the Guilford Board of Elections, they went with hand-marked paper ballots and a ballot marking device as an assistive device, an older model. And they had budgeted $8 million for ballot marking devices for all voters. Because they went with hand-marked paper ballots, they saved $5.8 million. They only spent $2.2 million. They took that $5.8 million that they did not spend on ballot marking devices, and they gave raises to their school bus drivers, and they put air conditioning in schools that didn't have any air conditioning. But all around the country now, jurisdictions are buying these outrageously expensive machines that are serving just as a big $5,000 pen to mark a ballot with all those associated problems.
Unbelievable. It's unbelievable. So John Brakey, you have been crusading around the country to get people to not buy these machines. What are you facing? How's it going?
You know, if we had more money, and, you know, it breaks my heart when I leave a state that I cannot find a right hand, okay, like Susan Pinshaw, and leave them there and put them on a stipend or a salary because, you know, me and Susan are driven on this thing, okay, from dawn till dusk, and we can only do so much. And there are other good people out there like us. We have to find them, develop them, because, you know, John F. Kennedy was right when he said a few, you know, that one person can make a difference and everybody should try. I know that Susan's making a difference. I know that I'm making a difference. And I know if we get more people thinking that way. You know, when I go into a state, I tell people, don't form a large group. Form a small group. I would rather have 10 groups with 10 people each, rather than one group with 100 people, because maybe we'll get 10 people doing a lot of work. You see what I'm saying? It's really getting people to think like Margaret Mead. A few committed citizens can change the world. In fact, it's the only thing that ever has. And if you form a committee and get too crazy, you're going to wind up in a bureaucracy going nowhere.
So here's the question. Come 2020, come the fall of 2020, how much of our election is going to be able to be manipulated with these ballot marking devices as opposed to hand-counted ballot image paper ballots?
Well, Harvey, they just approved at the end of December another bill for $425 million to be spent on supposedly on election security, but it includes voting machines. They're getting rid of the old DREs, and these counties are buying up these ballot marking devices. And can I say one more thing about what ESNS did? I call it evil genius of ESNS.
ESNS is the biggest voting machine vendor in the United States, and they're
in the world.
In the world, and their interest obviously is to sell as many of these high profit, low reliability ballot marking devices as possible. And the more of these BMDs that are out there, the more easily hackable the 2020 election will be. So go ahead and tell us, Susan, what you think here.
Well, I was just going to, it's just one more to sort of round out the picture about how ESNS has manipulated this situation. A big part of the Help America Vote Act passed in 2002 a big part of it was to provide accessible voting for voters with disabilities. And back in that era of 2002 through 2005, the disabled community, in my opinion, was used as pawns by the voting system vendors. They promoted the direct recording electronic machines. They said, if a disabled voter has to vote on a DRE, then everybody has to vote on a DRE because otherwise it's discrimination. And a lot of disabled voters fell into that trap and started promoting wanting these DREs for everyone. And in fact, we got them all around the country, not everywhere, you know, but I don't know the percentage, and I should, but John probably knows it. A big percentage had these direct recording electronic. So what did ESNS do? They come up with this ballot marking device that has a different size ballot than the regular ballot that we're all used to voting on. I mean, our ballots can vary in length because it depends how many races, but they're full-size paper. These summary cards that come out of the ballot marking devices made by ESNS are small. They're like half the size of a piece of paper. So what's happened? The disabled community has said, oh, it's discrimination if we have to vote on this and everybody else is voting on what we call a full-face paper ballot because our ballot is a different size. And they've already brought lawsuits in Maryland about it. Well, of course ESNS knew this was going to happen. We've been talking about discrimination for now 15 years. So what's happened is because they can't feel like they can't use these for just disabled voters, then it forces them to use them for all voters. And so coming in the back door, does that make sense, Harvey, what I'm saying?
Yes, ballot marking device technology as opposed to the real ballot marking device, which is a pen or a pencil, allows as someone who really wants to come in and steal the election. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Well, there are a lot of vulnerabilities with these ballot marking devices. Two of the worst problems are they count the votes with a barcode, which nobody knows really what it says. If they went to a hand count and say it was a very close election and they had to go back and take these little ballot summary cards and actually hand count them, nobody knows that those selections are correct because they've proven that voters don't check them. So, yes, someone could... It's possible that if the machines were manipulated, that voters would not catch the error. Does that make sense? And so if some voters did catch an error, they, you know, what happens? The election official says, "Whoops, there was an error," and take a new ballot or something. You know, they would never construe from that it was the whole election was a problem. So, they have vulnerabilities. Plus, the latest version of this Express Vote by ESNS, you mark the ballot and it tabulates it all in one machine, just sort of like a DRE. And they use them in Northampton County, Pennsylvania, and they completely miscounted the votes. I mean, to the tune of thousands. And ESNS, they were there all night hand counting these summary cards, and ESNS was scratching their heads and trying to figure out what happened, and nobody's ever come up with what's happened, but that's just an example.
Well, obviously, and if you mark a ballot, if you mark what you want on a computer machine, which is what these BMDs are, ballot marking devices, that machine can turn your vote into anything it wants to, and can be just as easily hacked as the machines that were in Volusia County infamously in 2000 that flipped 20,000 votes, at least for part of the evening, and helped put George Bush in the White House as opposed to Al Gore, who never said a word and still hasn't said a word. So what you're doing here, John Brakey and Susan Pinchon, is crusading to get us a hand-marked paper ballot that goes into a machine that takes a ballot image, which can be counted, and preserves the original hand-marked paper ballot in a legible form as opposed to a small card with barcoding on it. That's basically the summary, right?
Absolutely, Harvey.
I don't
need
barcodes.
Very good.
Right. Yeah. And so now, I mean, it's insane that we would have anything other than the hand-marked paper ballot, and this is really at the core. I mean, this actually could decide who wins the 2020 election, because I guarantee that in precincts that have wasted these tens of millions of dollars on these ridiculous ballot marking devices are going to be easily hacked, whether it's from, Cambridge Analytica or whoever else, or the Russians or the corporations or the KKK or the NRA, whoever wants to go in there and with an in to the local election board can flip an election very easily on these BMDs as opposed to the hand-marked paper ballots. I mean, it's really, really dangerous. We're getting towards the end of the hour here. Susan Pinchon, please identify yourself and tell people how they can get a hold of you.
Oh, thanks, Harvey. Our website is F like Frank, F like Frank, EC for Florida Fair Elections Coalition, ffec.org. If anybody wants to email me, you can email me at susanpinchon@gmail.com, and I'd be happy to communicate with anyone who's interested. There's a lot going on. We need a lot of eyes and ears and attention paid to this election, and there are things that people can do to help. So if you want to help, get hold of John or me, and we'd love to talk with you.
And John Brakey, how do people get a hold of you?
They can reach me by email at John Brakey, B-R-A-K-E-Y, a break with a Y, at gmail.com. On Facebook, I'm very active. You can see what I'm doing constantly if you track me as John Roberts Brakey or Audit USA, and you'll be able to see the hearing that happened today in Washington, D.C., understand how propaganda works and what we're trying to do to get people to unrig themselves, because before you unrig a system, you really do need to unrig your own mind, and you need to question everything that you know and how you really know it. It's very easy to go into a world that we're being easily manipulated. And that's why it's important to understand what's going on, because it's better to understand than be understood.
Yes. Now, let's switch real quickly. This hearing and these what's been going on in the investigation of the manipulation of the American electorate has a lot to do with Cambridge Analytica. Susan, you had some words about this that has come out of your observations in this hearing, and then John, you'll jump in. But Susan Pinchon, tell us about Cambridge Analytica and how it's been manipulating our elections.
Yes, it's really amazing, Harvey. And this hearing today, again, this hearing this morning was not about Cambridge Analytica. It was the vendors speaking and some activists speaking. But there is this film, The Great Hack, and again, I highly recommend it. It's on Netflix. There's also Democracy Now! Has some 4 segments on Cambridge Analytica, and those are well worth watching also. So what they talk about is in this film, The Great Hack, is that what they did was the Trump campaign hired Cambridge Analytica, and Cambridge Analytica focused on what they call the persuadables. They had 5,000 data points, they said, on every single voter in the United States. They knew how to reach them, how to influence them, how to persuade them. But they particularly went after the people that they called the persuadables. And as we know, the 2016 election was won by 70,000 voters in, I think, 5 states. Those were the persuadables that got persuaded to vote for Donald Trump. And Cambridge Analytica had, again, the weapons-level intelligence. One of the women who defected from the company said that this information manipulation was considered to be top secret and a defense, a weapon. And they used it in our 2016 election to convince these persuadables either not to vote for Hillary Clinton because they demonized her. And I think it said the Trump campaign had 55 million, at the end of the film, it says 55 million Facebook posts as opposed to just 60,000 from the Clinton campaign. They were everywhere, convincing people to vote for third party candidates, to vote against Hillary Clinton, and what they went on to say, I'll just finish up with this, is Cambridge Analytica was part of a defense contractor, SCL, and I can't remember what that stands for, but they did training. Cambridge Analytica did training for the United States military, for NATO, for the CIA, and they started out with some good things like convincing Muslim youth not to join Al-Qaeda. But they'd also won elections by convincing people not to vote. They showed in one election where they reached the youth of one country with a big campaign about being an activist by not voting. Stand up to your government by not voting. And sure enough, the side that had hired them won because the other side didn't turn out to vote. So I'm rambling on a little here, but it's really worth watching, important. And it's just unbelievable.
Now, I'm assuming the Cambridge Analytica is going to be deeply, or companies like it, will be deeply involved in 2020. John Brakey, is that the case?
Oh, absolutely. There's a lot of offshots from them. They've already formed a new corporations. That's where you can get that information on Democracy Now! And from January 7th show. It's just incredible. But, you know, one thing that it all sounds so complicated and what they've done or whatever, elections are heavily involved because they could only successfully have done that because of what they did in 2002 with the Help America Vote Act by standardizing all of the voter databases that they could hook them up to commercial databases. Do you see what I'm saying? That was the link that had to happen in order to do what they're doing now to us. And I'll say this, I'm a little panicky. I'm panicky because I travel this country. I see the hate on both sides of the aisle. Okay, that we're not talking. We are so
we got it
polarized.
John Brakey, Susan Pinchon, thank you so much. We will
thank you.
We're going to have you back to talk about this. There's nothing more important than preserving our right to vote and our ability to have our votes count and counted reliably. We will see you next
time.
Thank you, Harvey.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Solar-topia, solar-topia, solar-topia.